Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everybody, welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Oh, Sydney. Bad news. I gained 2 pounds again this week.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey.
It's all right.
What's that time of year? There's just so much good stuff to eat, and it's so cold. You don't want to go outside.
You watch, though. Next year, as soon as next year rolls around, I'm gonna get out there. I'm going to get this ship righted. I'm going
to
ride
That's good. We got a kid to take care of. We got to get in shape.
I know. I'm going to ride the bike.
Okay, what else are you going to do?
Eat a little healthier.
Okay, you know? I like those things. Those are both good ideas.
And, of course, going to kick it off right with a giganto cleanse.
With a cleanse?
Lemon juice, honey, mint, water, Tabasco. Cleanse it.
Where did you...
Blow it out.
Where did you hear about that?
Put it on TV, probably. I don't know. I don't keep track of that kind of stuff. That's... just errata.
What are you trying to accomplish?
Cleanse it.
Like, I know, but wait. Okay, so it's a cleanse.
Blow it out.
Right. I mean, that's graphic.
You ever go into your attic and just clean all the cobwebs out and just blow it all out?
No, I've never cleaned the cobwebs out of the attic. I'm terrified of our attic. But
yeah, but like, what if you weren't? You'd probably get up there and just blow it out, you know?
So you think that there are cobwebs inside your colon that you're trying to...
No, metaphorical meat-based cobwebs from just like all the terrible food I've been eating.
Right. This is already, I can see, going to be the grossest episode we've ever done.
What's the problem with cleanses?
If teeth really bothered you.
What's the problem with cleanses? Well, I just want to blow it out.
Okay. Well, how about we talk about cleanses? Let's talk about all things colonic.
All right, hit me.
Let's talk about cleanses. Let's talk about constipation. Let's talk about some enemas. What do you think?
Cleanses are hot right now. I can't imagine they're an old person thing. They're so now. I feel like they probably came or invented like 5 years ago.
No. But first, before I tell you how old they are, let me go ahead and thank two people.
Okay.
Beth and Aaron. The reason I thank both of you is that one of you suggested constipation. One of you suggested cleanses, and... we're going to talk about both. So thank you so much.
Blow them both out.
Yeah. So, Justin, as you mistakenly guessed, the idea of a cleanse is not new. It is very old. The idea is actually ancient. The Egyptians believed that food could collect in your gut and start to rot. And if it was in there too long, it would begin to release toxins into your body and then into your bloodstream as well.
Mm-hmm.
This was the concept of auto-intoxication, meaning that, you know, you're intoxicating yourself from the inside out, basically, from the stuff you're eating. And this idea, which the ancient Egyptians came up with, permeates the idea of a cleanse all the way up to current concepts of colon health, which is kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
The Egyptians used enemas mainly. A lot of colonic lavages. So, like, do you know what an enema is? Do you understand the concept of an enema?
They put a tube in your bottom,
mm-hmm.
and then they just blow it out.
They blow it out.
They shoot water in there.
Right. And when we're talking about enemas, as opposed to people who get colonic irrigation and colonic hydrotherapy and that kind of thing, it's really just how far up you're going. An enema does not go very far. Yeah, you can give yourself an enema at home. Certainly, we give them to patients in the hospital. It just cleans out the last bit of the colon, whereas a high colonic, so to speak, would clean out like a lot more of the colon. But yeah, we just squirt water, or the Egyptians used various herbal, you know, concoctions, and just squirt it up there and let it run back out and take all of the toxins with it. Was the basic idea. The Greeks also thought that this was true. And this makes sense if you think about the idea of the four humors. You know, they spent a lot of time trying to get stuff out of their body through various orifices.
Get it all balanced.
Right.
Get it out, whatever hole necessary.
Exactly. So, you know, sometimes that involved making yourself throw up. But then other times you had to, you know, get it out the back door.
Right. Whatever it took.
So
take no prisoners.
So you could do an enema for just about anything. Hippocrates would recommend them for fevers. So anything that ailed you, you could go ahead and try an enema. Why not? They mainly use pure water enemas. And they prescribe
better
them for,
than dirty, I think. Better than dirty water enemas.
If there was someone throughout history who prescribed dirty water enemas.
Don't trust that doctor.
I'm not aware of them, but they didn't add anything to it for the most part. They were just saying, no, just squirt that water up your butt. And they, like I said, they prescribed it for fevers, but also for headaches, asthma, colds, for childbirth, which was something that continued throughout history. The idea that a woman needed an enema before childbirth. Mm-hmm. And that's fairly recent. That's something that I think we've mentioned that before, that your moms or your grandmas might mention, oh yeah, before you give birth, you have to have an enema. We don't do that anymore. But we did for a long time.
Hmm.
And along with the medical benefits of enemas, throughout these cultures in particular that we've already talked about, enemas had a religious significance. A cleanse of any kind had a religious significance. So the easiest way you could cleanse yourself, and I think a lot of us are familiar with the significance of this, is fasting.
So, oh, yeah. That's, you know, similar, right?
Right.
You're not blowing anything up there, but you're just keeping anything new from going in.
Right. So just like, you know, fasting was a way to kind of purify yourself and clean yourself out, so to speak, spiritually, in preparation for some kind of religious feast or something. You could instead just, you know, instead of having to not eat for so long to clean your body out, just clean it all out at once.
Speedy. It's a speedy, speedy cleanse.
And in that way, you were not just purging yourself of physical toxins, but the idea was that you were purging yourself of spiritual toxins. Because sometimes after a prolonged fast or a particularly righteous cleanse,
super great cleanse,
you may feel that you have ascended to a higher level of consciousness.
Or hungriness.
Yes. You're probably just delirious from hunger, dehydration, and electrolyte imbalance.
Might as well shoot some water up there. That's going to set you right as rain.
And it was used in religious ceremonies.
Not formal ones, I'm assuming.
Yes, formal religious ceremonies.
Oh, man.
Yes, it was incorporated. And that's varied parts of the world. In Egypt, in India, China, in ancient Babylon, and in various parts of Africa. In their, you know, religious ceremonies, you would stop and just, you know, blow it all out, as you said.
Presumably after the offering. That is the time you want to do that.
You
don't want them thinking like, oh, this church, we have to change churches, Valerie. This place is terrible.
Can you imagine the people who were like, they just moved to town and they were like, well, we need to find a church. Let's just try some different ones and see which one suits us, you know?
Maybe Our Lady of, what are you doing back there?
I can't, being raised Catholic, I can't really imagine how that would fit into the religious ceremony.
It's snug. Let me put it that way.
it's all very quiet and peaceful. And I imagine, I mean, I don't know if you're, what kind of noises accompany like mass enemas.
I don't want to think about the noises that accompany mass enemas. Thank you.
That wasn't part of your... We
work in an audio-only format. We need to have a little more respect for Foley on this program. We do not need that particular sound effect to be replicated.
Do you think this is worse or better than snake handling? Would you be more likely to go to a church
that
might force you to participate in snake handling than
it depends on if I am the recipient or the deliverer of the enema. If I were to be on the receiving end, I'd take a snake. If I had to deliver it, I'd probably just go for it.
Is this a thing like you want to? I mean, is there something?
You gave me the either or. So there it is.
Strangers?
You gave me the either or. I'm just picking a binary choice. Give me my druthers. I'd rather stay at home and watch football on Sundays because I love sports. Don't laugh.
As far as how they administered these enemas, that was one thing that interested me. Most of the time, especially in some parts of Africa, they found these. They would use like a hollowed out animal bone or like a cow horn to administer the enema, which is a very undignified end for an animal, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
although the person's end is pretty undignified at that point too.
You've got a cow horn sticking out of your butt.
Yeah, you probably didn't think it would all shake out that way.
I keep picturing one of those cornucopias that you get to like decorate your tablescape at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you don't put all the fruits and
that probably needs to go to recycling. You're probably done with that after a single use.
I would think. Plenty.
Oh, come on, Sydney.
Sorry.
So yucky.
So the first enema syringe, the first formal enema administering device, shows up in 1000 AD.
Wow.
So a pretty long time ago. I tried to figure out who invented it, and it's actually a subject of debate who exactly was responsible.
But not a lot of people clamoring to take credit for that.
Well, that was kind of my thought, is that it's not that there were so many people who wanted the credit for it. It was everybody was kind of like, I don't know. I'm sure Doug's somebody idea. Did it first. It was not, you know.
It's not important.
That you don't need to put my name on it.
No.
What if your name was on it?
It was a real team effort.
What if you called it like the Justin device?
I can't do
that. I'm going to need a Justin device.
I deserve quick. Better.
Nurse, stat, Justin device to room Justin. 5. So there was another popular apparatus. In addition to the enema syringe, which basically was a syringe that squirted water up your butt. I mean, it had a little tube on it. It's not much more complicated than that. And when I say syringe, you know I don't mean needle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just making sure.
I'm with you.
Just clarifying. There's no needle involved. It's tubing.
Thank God.
There was another apparatus that had a tube that was, again, usually made of bone, of some, like a hollowed out leg bone of an animal. And then you would get like a bag that typically was an animal bladder. So then you would attach the animal bladder to the tube and squeeze the bladder that is filled with liquid, you know,
through the tube and into the tube.
And if you picture that in your head, you may imagine that it looks a little like a bagpipe.
Yeah, that would be that's about what I'm visualizing.
So in Spain, this was called playing the bagpipes.
Ugh.
So you could say that. I need to go. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go to the restroom and play the bagpipes. they also began to refer to this, the bag, as a clister purse. Clister became kind of the word for enemas, so there were clister syringes.
Hmm.
And this persists for many hundreds of years.
Huh.
And there are, in most of the time, you would use, you know, just kind of gravity to make everything happen. So you'd probably want to be laying down and, like, lift the bag up and, you know, you wouldn't want to apply a lot of pressure. You know, you can damage things. So
right.
You just kind of let the water run in and then stand up and let it run back out. It's kind of a gravity thing, right? Well, in some religious ceremonies, I guess you want a little more, I don't know, pomp. So you would designate some people as blowers. And you can go ahead and guess what their job was.
I'm going to guess blowing.
Yes.
Squeezing the bladder to make the air come out.
Exactly.
You got to work your way up to that position.
Squeeze
though.
It to make the to make the water come the out, right? Liquid up.
You don't
butt
put water
faster.
In there. That's no good.
Which is dangerous. You don't want to do that. You know, the colon could perforate. You get a hole in it if you blasted water up there too hard.
Got to be very ginger. Take a light touch. Blowers.
Careful what you do. And most of the time, again, you know, different cultures are using just mainly water. Like I said, sometimes they have an herbal substance in it, but largely just water. In some Mayan celebrations, though, they would throw in something that would be kind of fun, like alcohol or something that would be hallucinogenic. which you would then absorb in your system. So you'd get the enema, which I don't know, did you enjoy that? Maybe you did. And then you get really high afterwards.
From the...
the stuff you just shot up your butt.
I just want to make you say it.
And I think, wasn't that a fad in the recent years? Like, not that, but...
kids.
But I think there was women who were putting things soaked in vodka alcohol.
Vodka-soaked tampons.
Yes, yes. Wasn't that a thing?
I feel like that's a Snopes thing. I don't know if that actually was going on.
I would love to know if that was fake, because I heard that a lot. It was something that was talked about in, like, medical circles. Like, you got to be careful now. The kids are using vodka-soaked tampons, and you don't want to... they'll come in drunk, and you won't know why.
And then you'll figure it out. Yeah. You'll be like, whoa, very innovative.
This was not a move, by the way. No one suggested that we start checking all girls for vodka-soaked tampons. This is not a thing.
Yeah.
No, no. This young med students who may be listening, please don't do that.
Yeah.
You'll get kicked out of medical school.
It won't go well.
No. The Native Americans also added substances to their enemas. Tobacco was the most popular. And they use this for a variety of illnesses. I think I mentioned this in when we talked about tuberculosis. It was used for tuberculosis. It doesn't work.
No.
But they also just used that for fun, to absorb a whole lot of tobacco really quickly. That was also, it just felt good, I guess. They felt better afterwards.
It smells great.
So it's like you can, like, smoking with your butt.
It's like smoking with your butt. Tobacco enemas.
Is that something, as a former smoker, is that something that all smokers dream of doing someday?
Finally, the smooth, refreshing taste of tobacco injected in my butt.
Is that what you'd always dreamed would
No,
happen?
Dear. No.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
No. That's not really how it works.
The enema, so as we're moving through history, the enema is popular. It's mainly something that you use in religious ceremonies, but everybody kind of uses it every now and then if their doctor tells them to. But in the 1300s and moving into the 1400s, it just blew up, so to speak. Especially after King Louis the 11th was saved from death supposedly by an enema. He had some sort of an attack, I don't know of what, and because it's old timey and so they, you know, throw words around that don't really mean anything.
Right.
But his doctor prescribed an enema, he had it, and he got better.
It's a miracle cure.
So he began having regular enemas administered, and he even would have his dogs receive enemas periodically.
It's a noble job. Guy who had to do that, big ups to you.
Can you imagine the poor guy in his court who was like, you're the dog enema guy. I dub thee, sir, dog enema. I
gotta go get a smaller tube. Be back later.
And then from here, enemas really took off. By the 17th century, it was known as the age of the enema, or the age of the clister, as it was known.
Take that, Renaissance. Take that, Iron Age.
Age of the enema. There were lots of different enema syringes at that point that you could purchase. If you were less wealthy, you may get just a plain copper or porcelain syringe. Rich people had large collections of enemas, mother of pearl and silver enema syringes, I should say. King Louis the 13th had more than 200 enemas a year. And some people would have them multiple times a day. It was really, though, King Louis the 14th, the Sun King, who, I don't know, maybe we should call him the Enema King, because he was the biggest fan of enemas. They were so commonplace at that point that he would actually hold court and meet with advisors while receiving enemas.
You know, it's intimidating enough when you meet royalty, who understands their manners, their etiquette. There's a lot you have to keep in your head, but man, there is no better power play than having people come to the throne room and you are just getting water blasted in your butt. Power play.
Do you, at that point, I wonder,
it's
if
an
like
executive move.
Do King you think
Louis.
You're supposed to also?
Should I join you, your worship?
Or is that a huge faux pas?
Room on that tube for two, King Lou. Don't mind if I do.
That would be much trickier. You know, Prince William and Kate just came to the U.S. Did you hear about this?
Got an enema.
No, they didn't get, no, I'm not spreading that rumor. They didn't get an enema. No, they met, a basketball player and he put his arm around her. Did you not read about this?
No, no, I don't keep up on the latest.
He put his arm around her to pose for a picture and apparently that's a big no-no.
I did not know this.
But I was reading about this. So that's a violation of royal etiquette, but it doesn't apply to us Americans because we don't know any better.
That's right. We don't serve them. We fought for our right to put our arm around Kate Middleton.
So we're not in trouble for it, I guess. The basketball player is going to get off okay. But if he had walked in and they were both getting enemas, how would he have reacted? I don't know.
He wouldn't have put his arm around it. That's for damn
probably
sure.
Probably not. He probably would have stayed away from that. But anyway, the Sun King had over 2,000 enemas in his career as king. He claimed that it made him live longer, and he did reign for a very long time, so...
Proof positive.
Gosh, who knows? It was very popular among the upper crust at this point. A lot of fine ladies would do this mainly for their complexions. And they could either do them to themselves. They made these little enema syringes that had bent tips so that you could, you know, kind of reach around and administer your own enema. Or you could have your ladies in waiting administer your enema. Or if you were really modest, they came with these buttocks covers.
Oh, that's nice. A little dainty enema.
So that you can kind of, I can't even imagine what that must have looked like, but you cover your butt and then administer the enema through it. I guess there's like a hole in it or something. So nobody looks at your butt while you do it.
Perfect. Now, well, I imagine we're getting close to the modern era. What about the 1800s? What do those hold for enemas?
Well, let's take a quick pause before we visit the 1800s and make a side journey with me to the billing department.
Let's go. Sid, hit me. I'm ready. I'm ready for the future past of enemas.
So up until this point, you know, doctors were prescribing enemas, certainly, but nobody was really sure. I mean, they were also kind of a fad, so nobody was really sure if they worked or not. And that kind of changed with the endorsement by Nobel Prize winner Ilya Mechnikov, who was a really smart guy. Who discovered macrophages, which there are a lot of science-y people and biologists and stuff who are going, wow, right now, and you're just looking at me blankly. But it's really important.
Okay. I'll buy it. I'll take your word for it.
And so the point is, he's a really smart guy who also, you know, and I think this is like a recurring theme on our show, a really smart person who won a Nobel Prize for something awesome, but then also kind of dabbled in something that's a little
sketchier,
a little weird.
They're looking for their next hit. They didn't want to get into a sophomore slump. How are they going to follow up that thing?
This is his vitamin C.
Right.
So he also believed in the idea of auto-intoxication. He believed that the enema was very important, or colonic hydrotherapy, some way to remove toxins from the gut, and started writing about and talking about the importance of, you know, getting all of these toxic substances out of your colon to maintain good health. And this gave it a lot of legitimacy that it didn't have up until then. And this probably helped keep it alive, despite the fact that as we move into the 1900s, it really has begun to fall out of favor with the medical community at large because laxatives have been invented. So if you're constipated, if they think that you need to be cleaned out, they just prescribe you a laxative. They're not going to tell you to, you know,
blow it out.
Exactly. Which you'd think would make sense. You'd think most patients would prefer that. Like, here, just drink this Miralax as opposed to let me squirt this stuff up.
Then you got to be on the toilet forever. It's just such a hassle, though.
Well, and this because of the, you know, endorsement by Mechnikov, as well as the fact that for whatever reason, the wealthy and the famous were still huge fans of enemas. And so I think that, you know, and we've talked about this with other things. If the upper crust is doing it, everybody else figures it's a good idea, too.
This is probably the purest example of that particular grift.
And we've talked about before, we did a whole episode on Dr. Kellogg and his yogurt enemas. Remember that?
Yeah.
He prescribed yogurt enemas. And that was exactly the kind of person who would endorse the enema. It was, you know, the upper crust who would go visit somewhere like the, you know, the Kellogg, what was it? Kellogg Institute. And this was also around the same time when colonic hydrotherapy really came into vogue. And we've already kind of mentioned that, but it's basically the difference between an enema, which is just a small amount of liquid that you use like a little Like the little bulb syringe that we use to clean out Charlie's nose.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of a larger version of that with some tubing. Yeah. And you squirt it up there. Colonic hydrotherapy involved machinery and lots of tubing and lots of liquid.
Like a reverse milking machine, basically. Paint that picture for you.
Well, I mean, it stops at some point. It doesn't just pump you completely full of water.
Unless it goes crazy and we reach the singularity and the machine outsmarts humans, and then it does. And it does that to everybody. Checkmate, Terminator, Judgment Day. That's, extended director's cut.
That's what it's really the story of. It's the story of the day.
Story of a new Terminator movie.
That the high colonic machine became sentient and took over the world.
Fudgment Day, they called it.
Ew, really?
Sorry, I did my best.
Really?
I did my best.
You know, puns are outlawed in China now. You can't say that kind of thing.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So this was so popular, and you may have heard of this, that in Hollywood, colonics were a big deal. And there's I have learned this from doing this podcast. I guess there's a particularly famous road, Beverly Boulevard in California.
So everybody goes to get them done?
Yes. Well, in the 50s, that's where you would go to get them done. So it was known as Colonic Row because there were so many places that offered colonics to the stars.
Awesome.
So like I said, the high colonic is still done today. Most of the time they're just flushing you out with water, but they may or may not add some sort of herbal thing to it. Now the equipment that they use is regulated by the FDA because it is a procedure that has risk involved. But whatever they're doing to you is not regulated by the FDA. So it's not like we prescribe high colonics to people. That's just not something that we would do. Mm-hmm. It's not certainly I would prescribe an enema to somebody maybe because they need because they're completely constipated and sick from it. Or sometimes we do that. Well, we don't use enemas so much, but we clean people out before colonoscopies. So we get a clear view, that kind of thing. But we do not prescribe high colonics. And you got to be careful if you're going to have somebody do one, because as I mentioned, the speed with which they, you know, squirt the water up there, if it's too much, could perforate or you know, tear a hole in the side of your colon.
A professional do it, folks.
Yes.
Don't get cheap.
Or don't do it.
Or maybe don't. That's another alternative.
But if you are going to do it, I would make sure that it is somebody who does it regularly, who has equipment that has been approved by the FDA.
A super soaker. Okay? Don't be fooled. Get real equipment.
I don't even think you can get super soakers anymore.
Well, then, I mean, if they've been saving theirs. If they've kept on a shelf pristine for this exact occasion.
Just for this. But see, your bigger problem there is that you're probably going to introduce weird bacteria into your colon if you use a super soaker.
That's true. A lot of hose water in there.
So that's the other thing. It seems like the butt's kind of a dirty place, and so it wouldn't really matter if more bacteria got up there. But it absolutely does. You don't want to introduce weird bacteria into your colon.
Right.
So
no new special unique bacteria.
No. So you want to make sure that the equipment is approved and that everything they're using is sterile and clean, because it could kill you if it's done wrong.
Ugh.
And I've discovered this too. Some people do it for like sexy reasons.
Oh, like kink. Like it turns them on.
Yeah. It's like a thing.
Cool.
Like I guess that's that some prostitutes will provide that service for you.
Very cool. Just like be super safe again. Just be safe.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Make sure everything's clean.
Yep.
In addition to this, in modern times, we prescribe a variety of cleanses. Well, we don't prescribe them. The internet prescribes you a variety of cleanses for weight loss, as well as constipation and detoxification. The cleanse I think you were referencing, at least in part, was the Master Cleanse, Justin.
Yes, the Master Cleanse, which I think is like, I think I'm not making it up completely. I do think there's like lemon juice and water and like Tabasco sauce or hot sauce.
It's right there in my notes.
I'm not going to scope your notes. Okay. That would be
cheating. No, you're close. It's lemon juice, cayenne pepper, maple syrup, and salt water.
That's what I was thinking of.
So that's the Master Cleanse. There are also cleanses that involve just juice. And then a lot of like herbal things, like cleanses with like wormwood and
senna. I've
attended
a lot of juice fasts before. I tried it once until I got hungry that day. But I know people, my friend Dave was on one for like 60 days. It was crazy.
And I will tell you this, it's not anything from a medical standpoint, we're never going to tell you, like, you know what you need to do? You need to do a cleanse. Or at least I will say that is not an accepted medical treatment. I'm certain there are doctors who recommend it. It's not part of our standard care.
Right.
I have no reason to think that your body can't detoxify itself. You have organs specifically for that. So don't worry about the detoxification. That's not really a thing that happens as far as the idea that food's rotting in your system and creating toxins and you need to clean them out. Obviously, constipation makes you feel lousy and can make you sick, and there are lots of medicines for it. The solution is never a high colonic or a cleanse for that matter.
Yeah.
Cleanses can cause electrolyte imbalances. They can cause you to become dehydrated. They can be very dangerous. And there's no nutrients. So if you're doing it for a long time, you're missing things.
Yeah.
There are things your body's not getting that it needs. There are also today, in addition to the colonic hydrotherapy or just water, there are versions that use clay, that use salt water, that use glycerin.
I don't trust any of this.
I wouldn't. Yeah. And it does continue to be used as part of alternative medicine therapy. Hmm. One last thing that is still popular, even though it was first recommended in 1917, so this has really persisted, is the coffee enema.
What's the rationale there?
The idea initially was that, yes, it cleaned out the colon, but the more important thing was that it would so-called stimulate your liver. I don't know how the caffeine would stimulate your liver, but that was the perceived benefit.
Okay.
Nowadays, people use it mainly just to clean them out, detoxify. That's the idea. But there have been some claims that it can cure cancer.
Perfect.
Now, Justin.
Sydney.
Do you think a coffee enema cures cancer?
No, dear, I don't.
And see, you didn't even need a medical degree to know that.
Nope, I just eyeballed it and just kind of took a shot in the dark.
Coffee enemas have killed people.
Okay. Well, that's a knock against them.
Yes, yes. So you risk dehydration, you risk electrolyte imbalance, you risk infection. You also, I've read reports where people will do it when the coffee's still too hot.
Oh, come on.
You can imagine the problems that were resulting.
If you're
going to
do
that.
It, at least don't use instant. You're better than that. Get something fresh ground.
When we use enemas, we generally don't, you know, in the hospital, we're generally using either soap suds or just water enemas. We're not putting like a bunch of stuff up your
butt.
We don't
need a lot of foreign material up there.
Yeah, so it's not a good idea to do that in general. Just don't do that.
Just don't do that.
No.
Folks, thank you so much for listening to our program today. We hope you had fun listening to it. Thanks for people tweeting about our show at Sawbones is our Twitter handle. Folks like Claw PhD, Heather, Danielle Gallant, Dylan Kane, Nick Taylor, Warmish Crow, Melissa Ranks, Kevin Rushing, Anna Lisa, Jason Parkis, Sarah Rosinski, December Doggy, Olivia Hutton, so many others. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We sure appreciate it. Make sure to follow us on Twitter there too. At Sawbones is our handle on the internet.
There's also at Justin McElroy, if you want to check him out.
And she's at Sydney McElroy, SYDNEEMCELROY. And what else do we have? Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines for our intro and outro of our program.
If you have any suggestions for topics or things you'd like us to talk about, please email us.
It's sawbonesmaximumfun.org. Speaking of Maximum Fun, Sydney, there's a ton of great programs over there for you to listen to.
That's right.
We got a new one this week to talk about. Two new Maximum Fun podcasts, one by me and my brothers and one by my brother Travis. I want to talk about his show instead of our new one, The Adventure Zone. Travis and Andy Bunker Buddies is a show by Travis and his buddy Andy out there in L.A. as they talk about different disaster scenarios and how you can survive them. Just go to MaximumFun.org and search for Bunker Buddies. You can find that one there.
So check that out. The McElroy family is basically trying to dominate podcasting.
That's right, Sydney. We're one step at a time.
We're gonna conquer the world one podcast at a time.
If you get a chance to go rate and review Sawbones on iTunes, that would be super nice of you to do. And that's going to do it for us here on Sawbones. We're doing a live show with my brother and me, December 21st in Huntington, West Virginia, our hometown. If you want tickets to that, you can get them at bit.ly/CandleNightsLive. They're $15 and they are going fast. So if you want them, you'll be joining a ton of people from all over the country and Canada and Switzerland who are coming out to the show. So you should definitely do that. It's going to be a blast.
This is your chance. If you've been waiting thinking, got to get to Huntington, West Virginia. I've never been there. I've heard so much about it.
Finally have an excuse.
It's like on my list of places you got to see before you die. This is your chance.
This is your chance. So come and do it. That's going to do it for us. Until next Tuesday, I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
As always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.